Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory.
All right, welcome to another episode of Automate and Grow. And as we were just talking, this is a milestone episode because this is episode 25 of the podcast. And I'm wondering if this is actually a podcast or more of a show at this point, since we have both video and audio. But I'm blessed here today to be with Rye Walker from astronomer.io. And thank you very much for joining me. I know we had a little bit of a challenge getting on each other's calendar. So.
No, my pleasure. Well, excited to be here.
Now, Rye's in an interesting place for a startup, and you're in Cincinnati, Ohio. Is that where you're originally from, or how did you end up out there?
I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, I've lived in Ohio most of my life. I spent a little bit of time in Florida, but other than that, I've been here. So, great place to live.
And Astronomer is kind of an interesting story, I think, because first of all, you're in an area that took me a little bit to get my head wrapped around. That doesn't always happen. So you're in the business of basically creating data pipelines, and you focus on clickstream. So I don't know if you can explain what that is and what problem you guys are solving in the world, and then we can kind of talk about how you got to that.
Yeah, it's pretty technical, but you know, we help organizations build internal capability to automate their data pipelines. And so the reason they wouldn't want to do this is to build better internal data sets, improve their data security practices. But really, the main thing we're focusing on these days is trying to help them remove clumsy, like third-party integrations from their website, move those integrations to the server, which could improve the site speed, user experience, and for e-commerce companies, can really affect their revenue.
So you mentioned e-commerce companies being a key client, it sounds like, or a target client. What would the size of, you know, the companies you're going after, are these kind of like large retailers, or what are you running into?
Yeah, so we're actually working with everywhere from like a 20, one of the top five. That's a new customer that I can't talk about yet, but yeah, it's really up and down the chain. You know, basically anyone who's who feels threatened by Amazon.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Pretty much everyone.
So anyone that feels threatened by Amazon trying to...
That's all e-commerce, basically.
I was like, you must have a huge customer potential base.
Yeah, I know.
It's like everybody in the whole world. So the big problem it sounds like you're solving is a couple things. One, it sounds like when I have a large e-commerce website, I think you were talking about this, where I have to keep adding tags for different data sources. And that's a big problem because it kind of slows down the performance of my e-commerce website.
Yeah, even if you're, a lot of times people will say, well, these tags are set up to load asynchronously, meaning like at the end, after everything else happens. If you have like 60 or 80 tags all lined up to do work at the end, it still creates some lag, you know, potentially on a mobile phone, which, a lot of times us developers, we're developing on great internet with great computers. We don't see the stuff that's happening out in the real world, but all the e-commerce companies have great measurement systems in place. And I mean, it's even getting to the point where it affects their SEO. So Google will demote you if your site's slow. So it's actually a factor in PageRank. So yeah, it's a pretty important thing. You have marketing people saying, I need this tag, I need this tag. They keep adding more and more. But then now there's executive pressure as well as technical pressure from people to speed up the site. So there's really no place for that to go except to squeeze it into one, we call it super tag, and then do all the work on the server. And that's way easier said than done. But that's the idea. And the reason why, with the rise of machine learning and all these algorithms, data in motion is becoming more valuable, really, than data at rest. The only value of the data at rest is to have a learning algorithm. Basically real-time recommendations in e-commerce is an important thing. With some of the grocery companies that we're familiar with, they do some item recommendations for substitutions, so if you're trying to add a certain peanut butter but it's out of stock, they can, in a second, recommend something, an alternative to you that matches your preferences. So a lot of real-time stuff starting to happen in e-commerce.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, so If I'm using Astronomer, the idea is that instead of adding all these individual tags now, you're aggregating to one point, and then I can utilize that in, and we talked about a couple of the examples. One would be if I need that data from my website, instead of putting a pixel on for, let's say, Facebook or Google Ads or maybe a marketing automation platform, you would have that one super tag and you have integrations to like 1,000 different marketing automation or analytics platforms.
Yep, that's the vision. That's the mountain we're currently climbing. And again, it really just, it's like one customer and one integration at a time to build out all this. But that's our mission. And, you know, we hope to, over the next few years, really get it to the point where, you know, when we land in with a new customer, we can take off half their tags on day, I don't know if it's day one, but in the first few months, and continue to hack away at the rest of them. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. Everyone really wants it to be this way, but the reality is the easy thing to do is just to give someone a JavaScript tag and have them drop it in. It's the easy button, you know?
But, right.
There's appetite now for the hard button. And for a lot of these integrations, there is no hard button.
So now I think you mentioned that you're up to 50 customers. And how did you come about to find those guys? And what's the response been when you go out and talk to them for the first time?
Yeah, well, I mean, it really depends on who we talk to. I mean, you know, in startups, you have an ideal customer profile, and then not too many people fit the ideal customer profile perfectly. So we're also working with, you know, a lot of other types of businesses. You know, in the early stages, we've been going since 2015. We didn't know when we started that e-commerce was going to be important to us, for example. Maybe we should have had that intuition, but we didn't. It just kind of started. We're like, wow, it's kind of weird. Like, every other customer is e-commerce.
Right.
Maybe we should understand why this is happening. It's been a learning experience. We're approaching Series A. You know, we're basically, we still have a lot of product to build. This is a product that never is completed. But even I started with a client side platform similar to like what Segment.com or others do, but we've been working hard to migrate to this newer idea over the past year.
And then, so when you started back in 2015, was it just like you created a solution for one customer, or did you kind of like go on a hypothesis and build something and then go try to sell it?
Yeah, the fun thing, it totally wasn't like that. So it actually started out as, we had a product called User Cycle, which basically measured, basically user engagement. Basically, you had to screen your user data to us, and we would spit out like which of your customers are most engaged, which ones are you losing, things like that. Things you see like Intercom has that algorithm.
Oh, right, the messaging startup, yeah.
Yeah. So like we were just basically building that algorithm. The problem we had was for our product to work, we needed customers to screen their data to us, and that was really hard to get them to do. You know, basically, when you're brand new, no one wants to do that. We recognize there's about, you know, there's a smart tech, marketing technology grid of 8,000 companies. I think
right.
It was 3,000, but now it's 8,000.
Damn. Yeah. Is that literally 8,000? That wouldn't surprise
me,
but.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, 8,000 logos on the thing. And then, you know, we're like, there's got to be, I don't know, there's 100,000, maybe even a million companies who may need to send data to these 8,000 destinations. So let's say it's a million. That's 8 billion like potential pipelines that need to get built.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. We knew the friction to our own. Now again, not everybody's going to, you know, send all their data to 8,000 destinations, but possibilities, yes. It doesn't matter how you slice that number, it's a lot.
And that's a lot.
We knew the friction was really high because we couldn't get people to send data to us. So we just said like let's switch over to that problem. But actually, the name Astronomer came about because we were building, we were specialists in a technology called Meteor, which is a front-end web application development framework. And so actually, Astronomer was literally a library for Meteor at the time to basically automatically send all the user events to our service.
Oh, wow.
So that's the thing, so it started pretty small. It just started as an open source project that we used, and then kind of slowly, you know, you always rewrite your own history in startups, you know, like to make it sound like you know
sexier
exactly
than
what
it
you're
is.
Doing.
Yeah, but I had this vision. A unicorn came down from, and then
Nah, it's not that way. No, it was more of a gradual thing, but, you know, we shortened it up now. I'm telling you the long version of the story. But, yeah, the reality was it was a pretty slow, you know, over a month's transition from what we were doing before to doing this stuff that we're doing now.
That sounds really fast, but...
Yeah. You got to be fast.
I think your slow and my slow might be different, but...
When you're venture-backed, the clock is ticking, you know? You got to move quickly.
So it sounds like, now you mentioned venture back. So I know you had mentioned that you've raised about a total of 5 mil, including a 2.5 mil round last year. What was that process like? Did you go out and raise money and then build a product? Did you have a product and you were pitching?
I mean, I think we're always building the next version of our product. You know, like right now we're pretty active on some important project that feels like really here we are 3 years in and we're waiting on product, you know, to really sell what we want to sell.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm having flashbacks to something, but
yeah. It's like, you know, we constantly have to have the discipline to sell. We say sell what's on the truck versus sell what's coming next. You know,
sure.
we want to sell the future, but it makes sense.
Oh, you froze.
Sell what you can actually deliver. So, I think it's probably true for a lot of startups, especially in the enterprise software space, because your product's never fully done. There's always some new idea that's going to make it better.
And then what was your experience when you first went out and started selling? And I don't know if you were involved in that process. You have co-founders, I think, right?
Yeah, but I've always been involved in sales.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. So what was the reception like when you went out? And like, did you call friendlies first? Did you just kind of go after that ideal client profile? What was that experience like?
So it was May 21st when we pivoted, May 21st, 2015. I know this because it was a password on a site. I won't tell you what site this is. It was our password for a while with some other punctuation. But no, on May 21st, we actually went to a conference called Collision. It was in Las Vegas. And, you know, we basically, on that day, decided to switch from doing UserCycle, which was the previous company, to Astronomer.
Wow.
Based on the reaction we were getting, just like, you know, it's fun. I got the whole get out of the building, you know, lean startup methodology. Going to a conference with your startup idea is a really strong way of finding out how in love you are with it.
That is a pivot. That is like the definition of like an Uber pivot. Pun intended with Uber, but.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, it was, and it was exciting, you know, when we did it. You know, we just basically recognized on day one when we were pitching UserCycle, it was, you know, we had this other thing kind of in our pocket, but we hadn't really pulled it out much. And on day two, we said, let's just talk about that instead.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I think I go through this where I'm like, you know, I'm out talking about one idea and then I unfortunately have too many ideas sometimes. And I'll mention something else and people get excited about that. And you're like, no, I got to be disciplined. But it sounds like you were like, no, that's where the, you know, the money is. And you had the guts to kind of switch on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing is anything that's a good opportunity, a good is idea to start with, you know. So at the time, there were other companies doing this that we knew of, but we recognized, like Second.com, we were like, just by our own mouth, like they had 0.5% of the market, you know, so they didn't have like a dominant position. So we figured like we'd almost be helping the industry, helping their cause by having another company doing the same thing. Make me, you know, like a second follower. You know, maybe we can get half the companies in the world to use this type of technology if we were both selling it. You know, so that was my theory on that. Is, you know, it's like the market can grow with a number of good companies selling, and so that was our theory.
That makes sense, actually, because I remember. I think, I can't remember which company it was at, but it was probably like in early 2000s that I was at. And they were like, well, we need one more competitor to legitimize the market. And that was kind of like the feeling at the time. And it was like, all right, good, they're here. You know, now we can all go out and tell a similar story. It's not a matter of whether they're going to do this. It's like, who are they going to do it with? So it's kind of interesting to hear you say that.
Yeah.
And then now.
Yeah, I think like Drift and Intercom are that way. Yeah, Drift and Intercom are both like. They're directly competitive, but I actually think they're both helping each other achieve their product goals.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's funny how that happens. I wish I need to be at that point where I'm having that problem. It's like, where's the other competitor?
Yeah,
not 10 million competitors, but so you're in an interesting place for a startup, and it sounds like you had some some backing from both, you mentioned the Midwest, but then also maybe from the Valley. What was the reception like to the fact that you wanted to be headquartered in Cincinnati?
Well, I mean, we actually went through an accelerator called AngelPad out of New York City,
and our
demo day was in San Francisco. This was back in 2015.
What's his name? Thomas?
Tomas.
Tomas. I talked to him a long time ago. I remember that. AngelPad. Okay.
Yeah, he's a wild man. I like him a lot.
He is a wild man. I like him.
So the idea there was, what we learned was it's really hard to raise money from good seed stage investors from San Francisco while staying in Cincinnati. We didn't know at the time that was going to be true, but at least at that point in time in 2015, like, we weren't able to really pull down a big San Francisco round while staying here. So I'd say about 2/3 of our money historically has come from the Midwest, but we do have some money from the Valley, probably 3 or 4 smaller investors, as well as an investor out of Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, right. We were talking about that because I'm actually an Irish citizen. So I'm like, if next time you go, let me know and we'll go and
tag along, right?
We always meet up.
Yeah.
So do you think that your future remains in Cincinnati, or how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, so we recently, we now have 3 people working out of Denver and Boulder. So we actually did a press release saying, hey, we're working out on, and we, doing a partnership with Galvanize. They have a data science program in there. So, it's, we made the decision recently we want to build a remote culture. That as we hire new people, I'd rather they be in another ecosystem than Cincinnati, to be honest, because there's really no great reason other than like team chemistry and team collaboration for people to be located here. And I think there's a lot of reasons, if we can hire great people with deep experience in our space from around the world, I just think that'd be fun to do. And I think the technology and the tools have made it way more. And so that's what we're aiming to do, is build a more distributed team.
And that makes sense too. If you're in an area that maybe is a little more challenged to get talent like that, then having a remote culture makes total sense. And
yeah, I mean, we can hire devs all day long here, and they're affordable, but they're not the best. They're not the best they can be versus, if I look at every candidate for the same job around the world. So we're basically going to bet on the idea that it's better to have the best talent over the most local talent. So.
That makes sense. And then I think you said at 18 people, what's the makeup of that? Is it mostly developers? Like, it sounds like you have a very aggressive sales plan over the next quarter. So.
Yeah, no, it's about 12 developers and 6 people who aren't developers, which I call those people go to market. So it's, which includes marketing, sales, qualifying. I think marketing is changing a lot and sales is changing. We're really working as much as we can to make our sales motion, our marketing and sales motion, like, fully repeatable. That's the main goal of getting to Series A, is just to show that you can sell the same thing, like, cookie cutter, boom, boom, boom,
right,
boom, and you have measurements and all that stuff. So that team is focusing very much on standardizing what we sell.
So what is their, you mentioned that marketing and sales has changed. What's their approach to getting in? Like, are they doing a lot of content marketing? Is it a lot of direct sales approach? Like, what are you finding success? Because you're at a, and you maybe you're figuring that out, because you're probably at an early stage of trying to grow significantly.
Yeah, I mean, content is definitely a big strategy for us. There was a time where we would do a blog post every week. We did that for like probably 40 straight weeks, and
broke
our streak at some point. But it's good to have. We have a lot of old finding that ads are there's certain ads we can run that are really good. Targeting segment.com, switching from them, or Airflow is this new kind of data processing technology that is inside of our platform, and we're commercializing. We're kind of the first to commercialize it. So a few ads we can run that create inbound, our content, and then really events are going to be big for us going forward. There's e-commerce, speaking opportunities or trade shows we can go to. So we're going to really invest in that.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Get out there in front of people is always challenging today. So
yeah,
if an event can draw people, then that's probably really beneficial to you guys.
Yeah.
Well, I want to be conscious of your time. A couple things that I usually ask, first of all, I guess, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think is important for, and particularly for any companies that are kind of maybe before the stage you're at or at the stage you're at that would be helpful?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like for me, like product is always interesting. And again, maybe it's just enterprise software, but you know, there's one of the biggest challenges we have is, you know, especially as you try different things, you might create a new variation of a product, and then how do you know when to kill that variation? You know, mm-hmm. So I like to think of what we're doing is it's like a tree growing with these different branches, and you know, a leaf can turn into a branch, and it's a pretty chaotic process. And how do you, you know, it can feel very chaotic to everyone inside. So that's one of my biggest challenges is like I want to let that tree grow where it needs to grow. You know, I want the leaves to reach for the light and go in that direction while at the same time, like having a roadmap. So it's one of the big challenges we've had is like, you know, we've kind of gone to the point where we just literally sort order our, the things we want to change in the product. And we just work on the top 10 each quarter or each sprint, like 4 to 6 sprints now. So I think that's, you know, I'm always interested to hear how other people are dealing with that. So, you know, I just thought I'd share that we basically have gone like full agile there and don't really plan out the next sprint until the previous sprint's done.
And I think that's interesting for people because it's an unusual way to approach a product development cycle. And it sounds like a couple, like number one is that you would have to have a culture where you would be tolerant of that. And as well as maybe of investors, right? Because they're like, what do you know, you're not focused, you're all over the map, right? So I don't know if you run into that.
And then,
so that's an interesting approach, but not to be, you know, I guess the asterisk is probably, it sounds like, be prepared for pushback from investors or.
Yeah, or just like you can kind of make up a plan for what you know, even the fact that the tree is growing kind of chaotically, you can guess based on other indicators. Like, you're not going to be exactly right, but you can see which branches are thickening, and so you can kind of predict what's happening. So, like I said, with e-commerce, we saw. So now I talk about the fact that we're focusing on e-commerce, but that branch just kind of thickened up on me over the past year, and that's how we needed to talk about that. We also have like a bunch of customers that are consulting, so we actually are explicitly not going after partners right now, but yet like a quarter of our customers are actually consultants, you know, doing services for other people. So
that would make sense because then they could probably leverage what data they're pulling in through your system and give advice on that or other services, right?
Yeah, on our plan until it emerged in our reality, and now it is part of our plan. Yeah. We have case studies that we can cite, you know, like success stories.
That's great. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you, and is there anything that you would like people to make sure they do before?
I would just say, like, if you can go to our website, astronomer.io, and chat us up. You know, we always have people on there, and feel free to ask anything about data pipelines, certainly customer data, clickstream stuff. Like we're super aggressive on our pricing, and if there's things we can help, love to.
Terrific. Okay, I'm going to wrap up with two questions. One is, how are you, Rye, and maybe the team at Astronomer changing the world?
I'd say we're changing the world by making it easier for data pipelines to be built, which is going to power machine learning, which is going to power AI. So AI has come very data hungry. You know, like the algorithms want you to send it 100 different data sources, and it's going to do its math and figure out what the right outcomes are. And so, you know, we really feel like we are enablers. We have a saying. No one's on our website anymore, but we say like we're with the machines, you know. We are humans. We're trying to help the machines win.
I'm sure that'll make you popular in some circles, but
tongue in cheek. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think that there's great opportunity to do machine learning, and so and it's going to make the world a better place. It might ruin the world, but it most likely
no. Well, it sounds like you're at an enviable spot then, because if Skynet ever does come to fruition, then you might have a switch to turn it off. So
we'll maybe we'll be have some power there.
I'm coming to your house. Okay, the final thing that I'll wrap up on, when we have interesting guests on the show, we ask them to nominate other interesting guests that you think might be great to have on Automate and Grow. Usually the first idea that pops in your head is the best, but we talk to experts and entrepreneurs. Some, when they're experts, it's usually on, you know, automation and growth, obviously. So new technology or sales, marketing, and support automation. And entrepreneurs can be across different realms. So who would you like to nominate to appear on an episode of Automate and Grow, and who can you introduce us to?
I mean, there's a guy here in town who's working on, I think it's a great idea. He's trying to automate or, you know, at least make it easier, a personal trainer via text. So I think it's a cool idea. Like, I always need to get in better shape. So a company called Kai, K-A-I, his name's Jonathan Smith, and he's basically taking on the idea that, you know, we all want personal trainers, but we don't necessarily want to see them. You know, we don't necessarily want the pressure of having them, like, you know, but they could also work in other areas of life too. So I think that the idea of a personal assistant, and it'll be human augmented for sure for a while, but
yeah. Sorry, I lost you for a second. So you're saying it'll start out human augmented, but there's actually an artificial intelligence component?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the plan. They're early stage, so they haven't built out a lot of that yet. But there's actually another company I would mention, X.AI, Dennis Mortensen.
I know Dennis.
Okay, well there you go.
Yeah, we had Dennis on the show actually.
Oh well, never mind then. You already know all the cool people.
Yeah, well, I know one cool person anyway. I mean,
I'm a big X.AI user. I've been a user for years now.
Oh, great. So. Yeah, I think there's another company out there that maybe someone can introduce me to, which is Magic. I'm kind of curious about what they're doing. So I think they're similar, but not in the training space, but more personal assistant space. So, all right. So we have a nomination. It's Jonathan Smith, right?
Yep.
And Kai. It's Kai?
K-A-I.
Terrific. All right. We will look for that introduction. And Rye, I really appreciate you spending time with us today. It's really kind of intriguing to understand what you guys are doing. And it's also, I appreciate the insight into both product innovation. You're like right in the core of a really, really interesting area, even if it's tough for me to understand originally. But also on, you know, kind of your journey to the point where now you're going to try and grow by 60% a quarter. So we're going to keep an eye on that. Anything we do to help, let us know. But all right, this is going to wrap another episode of Automate and Grow, episode 25, in fact. And we look forward to talking to everyone on episode 26. And thank you, Rye, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.